Chapter 70. No doubt at all of that, my dear. Apostrophe, and it is a creditable thing to have his acquaintance. And it, Fagin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pursued Tom. Very much so, indeed, my dear. They're only jealous, Tom, because he won't give it to them. Apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Tom, triumphantly, that's where it is. He has cleaned me out. But I can go, and earn some more, when I like, can't I, Fagin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to be sure you can, and the sooner you go the better, Tom, so make up your loss at once, and don't lose any more time. Dodger. Charlie. It's time you were on the lay. Come. It's near 10, and nothing done yet. Apostrophe, in obedience to this hint, the boys, nodding to Nancy, took up their hats, and left the room, the Dodger and his vivacious friend indulging, as they went, in many witticisms at the expense of Mr. Chitling, in whose conduct, it is but justice to say, there was nothing very conspicuous or peculiar. Inasmuch as there are a great number of spirited young bloods upon town, who pay a much higher price than Mr. Chitling for being seen in good society, and a great number of fine gentlemen composing the good society aforesaid, who established their reputation upon very much the same footing as Flash Toby Crackit. Now, apostrophe, said Fagin, when they had left the room, I'll go and get you that cash, Nancy. This is only the key of a little cupboard, where I keep a few odd things the boys get, my dear. I never lock up my money, for I've got none to lock up, my dear, ha, 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 none to lock up. It's a poor trade, Nancy, and no thanks, but I'm fond of seeing the young people about me, and I bear it all, I bear it all. Hush, apostrophe, he said, hastily concealing the key in his breast. Who's that? Listen. Apostrophe, the girl, who was sitting at the table with her arms folded, appeared in no way interested in the arrival, or to care whether the person, whoever he was, came or went, until the murmur of a man's voice reached her ears. The instant she caught the sound, she tore off her bonnet and shawl, with the rapidity of lightning, and thrust them under the table. The Jew, turning round immediately afterwards, she muttered a complaint of the heat, in a tone of languor that contrasted, very remarkably, with the extreme haste and violence of this action, which, however, had been unobserved by Fagin, who had his back towards her at the time. Bah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he whispered, as though nettled by the interruption. It's the man I expected before. He's coming downstairs. Not a word about the money while he's here, Nance. He won't stop long. Not 10 minutes, my dear. Apostrophe, laying his skinny forefinger upon his lip, the Jew carried a candle to the door, as a man's step was heard upon the stairs without. He reached it, at the same moment as the visitor, who, coming hastily into the room, was close upon the girl, before he observed her. It was Monks. Only one of my young people, apostrophe, said Fagin, observing that Monks drew back, on beholding a stranger. Don't move, Nancy. Apostrophe, the girl drew closer to the table, and glancing at Monks with an air of careless levity, withdrew her eyes. But as he turned towards Fagin, she stole another look, so keen and searching, and full of purpose, that if there had been any bystander to observe the change, he could hardly have believed the two looks to have proceeded from the same person. Any news? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Fagin. Great. Apostrophe, and good? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Fagin, hesitating as though he feared to vex the other man by being too sanguine. Not bad, anyway, apostrophe, replied Monks with a smile. I have been prompt enough this time. Let me have a word with you. Apostrophe, the girl drew closer to the table, and made no offer to leave the room, although she could see that Monks was pointing to her. The Jew, perhaps fearing she might say something aloud about the money, if he endeavored to get rid of her, pointed upward, and took Monks out of the room. Not that infernal hole we were in before, apostrophe she could hear the man say as they went upstairs. Fagin laughed, and making some reply which did not reach her, seemed, by the creaking of the boards, to lead his companion to the second story. Before the sound of their footsteps had ceased to echo through the house, the girl had slipped off her shoes, and drawing her gown loosely over her head, and muffling her arms in it, stood at the door, listening with breathless interest. The moment the noise ceased, she glided from the room, ascended the stairs with incredible softness and silence, and was lost in the gloom above. The room remained deserted for a quarter of an hour more. The girl glided back with the same unearthly tread, and, immediately afterwards, the two men were heard descending. Monks went at once into the street, and the Jew crawled upstairs again for the money. When he returned, the girl was adjusting her shawl and bonnet, as if preparing to be gone. "Why, Nance," apostrophe exclaimed the Jew, starting back as he put down the candle, "how pale you are." Apostrophe, apostrophe, pale. Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed the girl, shading her eyes with her hands, as if to look steadily at him. "Quite horrible. What have you been doing to yourself?" Apostrophe, "nothing that I know of, except sitting in this close place for I don't know how long and all," apostrophe replied the girl carelessly. "Come, let me get back, that's a dear." Apostrophe, with a sigh for every piece of money, Fagin told the amount into her hand. They parted without more conversation, merely interchanging a good night. Apostrophe, when the girl got into the open street, she sat down upon the doorstep, and seemed, for a few moments, wholly bewildered and unable to pursue her way. Suddenly she arose, and hurrying on, in a direction quite opposite to that in which Sykes was awaiting her, returned, quickened her pace, until it gradually resolved into a violent run. After completely exhausting herself, she stopped to take breath. And, as if suddenly recollecting herself, and deploring her inability to do something she was bent upon, wrung her hands, and burst into tears. It might be that her tears relieved her, or that she felt the full hopelessness of her condition, but she turned back, and hurrying with nearly as great rapidity in the contrary direction, partly to recover lost time, and partly to keep pace with the violent current of her own thoughts, soon reached the dwelling where she had left the housebreaker. If she betrayed any agitation when she presented herself to Mr. Sykes, he did not observe it, for merely inquiring if she had brought the money, and receiving a reply in the affirmative, he uttered a growl of satisfaction, and replacing his head upon the pillow, resumed the slumbers which her arrival had interrupted. It was fortunate for her that the possession of money occasioned him so much employment next day in the way of eating and drinking, and withal had so beneficial an effect in smoothing down the asperities of his temper, that he had neither time nor inclination to be very critical upon her behavior and deportment. That she had all the abstracted and nervous manner of one who is on the eve of some bold and hazardous step, which it has required no common struggle to resolve upon, would have been obvious to the lynx-eyed Fagin, who would most probably have taken the alarm at once. But Mr. Sykes, lacking the niceties of discrimination, and being troubled with no more subtle misgivings than those which resolve themselves into a dogged roughness of behavior towards everybody, and being, furthermore, in an unusually amiable condition, as has been already observed, saw nothing unusual in her demeanor, and indeed, troubled himself so little about her, that, had her agitation been far more perceptible than it was, it would have been very unlikely to have awakened his suspicions. As that day closed in, the girl's excitement increased, and, when night came on, and she sat by, watching until the housebreaker should drink himself asleep, there was an unusual paleness in her cheek, and a fire in her eye, that even Sykes observed with astonishment. Mr. Sykes, being weak from the fever, was lying in bed, taking hot water with his gin, to render it less inflammatory, and had pushed his glass towards Nancy, to be replenished for the third or fourth time, when these symptoms first struck him. Why, burn my body? ... said the man, raising himself on his hands as he stared the girl in the face. You look like a corpse come to life again. What's the matter? ... ... replied the girl. Nothing. What do you look at me so hard for? ... What foolery is this? ... demanded Sykes, grasping her by the arm, and shaking her roughly. What is it? What do you mean? What are you thinking of? ... of many things, Bill, replied the girl, shivering, and as she did so, pressing her hands upon her eyes. But, Lord, what odds in that? ... The tone of forced gaiety in which the last words were spoken seemed to produce a deeper impression on Sykes than the wild and rigid look which had preceded them. I tell you what it is, said Sykes. If you haven't caught the fever and got it coming on now, there's something more than usual in the wind, and something dangerous too. You're not a going to. No, damn. You wouldn't do that. Do what? Asked the girl. There ain't, said Sykes, fixing his eyes upon her, and muttering the words to himself. There ain't a stauncher-hearted gal going, or I'd have cut her throat 3 months ago. She's got the fever coming on, that's it. Fortifying himself with this assurance, Sykes drained the glass to the bottom, and then, with many grumbling oaths, called for his physic. The girl jumped up, with great alacrity, poured it quickly out, but with her back towards him, and held the vessel to his lips, while he drank off the contents. Now, said the robber, come and sit aside of me, and put on your own face, or I'll alter it so, that you won't know it a gin, when you do want it. The girl obeyed. Sykes, locking her hand in his, fell back upon the pillow, turning his eyes upon her face. They closed, opened again, closed once more, again opened. He shifted his position restlessly, and, after dozing again, and again, for 2 or 3 minutes, and as often springing up with a look of terror, and gazing vacantly about him, was suddenly stricken, as it were, while in the very attitude of rising, into a deep and heavy sleep. The grasp of his hand relaxed, the upraised arm fell languidly by his side, and he lay like one in a profound trance. The laudanum has taken effect at last, murmured the girl, as she rose from the bedside. I may be too late, even now. She hastily dressed herself in her bonnet and shawl, looking fearfully round, from time to time, as if, despite the sleeping draught, she expected every moment to feel the pressure of Sykes' heavy hand upon her shoulder. Then, stooping softly over the bed, she kissed the robber's lips, and then opening and closing the room door with noiseless touch, hurried from the house. A watchman was crying 9:30, down a dark passage through which she had to pass, in gaining the main thoroughfare. Has it long gone the half hour? Asked the girl. It'll strike the hour in another quarter, said the man, raising his lantern to her face. And I cannot get there in less than an hour more, muttered Nancy, brushing swiftly past him, and gliding rapidly down the street. Many of the shops were already closing in the back lanes and avenues through which she tracked her way, in making from Spitalfields towards the west end of London. The clock struck 10, increasing her impatience. She tore along the narrow pavement, elbowing the passengers from side to side, and darting almost under the horses' heads, crossed crowded streets, where clusters of persons were eagerly watching their opportunity to do the like. The woman is mad. Said the people, turning to look after her as she rushed away. When she reached the more wealthy quarter of the town, the streets were comparatively deserted, and here her headlong progress excited a still greater curiosity in the stragglers whom she hurried past. Some quickened their pace behind, as though to see whither she was hastening at such an unusual rate, and a few made head upon her, and looked back, surprised at her undiminished speed. But they fell off one by one, and when she neared her place of destination, she was alone. It was a family hotel in a quiet, but handsome street near Hyde Park. As the brilliant light of the lamp which burnt before its door guided her to the spot, the clock struck 11. She had loitered for a few paces as though irresolute, and making up her mind to advance, but the sound determined her, and she stepped into the hall. The porter's seat was vacant. She looked round with an air of incertitude, and advanced towards the stairs. "Now, young woman," said a smartly dressed female, looking out from a door behind her, "who do you want here?" "A lady who is stopping in this house," answered the girl. "A lady?" Was the reply, accompanied with a scornful look. "What lady?" "Miss Maylie," said Nancy. The young woman, who had by this time noted her appearance, replied only by a look of virtuous disdain, and summoned a man to answer her. To him, Nancy repeated her request. "What name am I to say?" Asked the waiter. "It's of no use saying any," replied Nancy. "Nor business?" said the man. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.